Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we have some fun predictions for you guys today, as, of course, UFC Vegas 103 goes down this Saturday, March 1st. Very exciting stuff in the main event. Manel Cape takes on Asu Almabayev, the number 6 and number 8 flyweights in the world. We have full predictions for that card on today's episode as well. Looking at some new UFC fights that have been announced and some new UFC news. Dana White's actually going live any minute now as I'm recording, so next week we're probably going to be talking about even more bigger news. But as for today, we're just going to talk about what we know in the present moment. Also, we're going to be looking at the NBA and NHL, checking in on their current standings. Also going to be looking at top 10 new things in pop culture. And we're actually going to be ranking every single Elimination Chamber, WWE Elimination Chamber event that has ever taken place. 14 events have taken place, with the 15th, of course, Elimination Chamber Toronto, going down this upcoming Saturday. If you haven't listened to episode 166, I believe it is, we dropped our predictions for that, but we are going to be ranking every event, from 14 being the worst and number 1 being the best, of course. A lot of fun stuff on today's episode. I mean, I got a hockey game to coach in roughly about 3 hours, so I best keep going on recording this. So, kicking things off, as always, new UFC news. Probably the biggest thing that most people, and I think Dana White might speak about, are aware of, is that Dan Hooker pulled out of his fight against Justin Gaethje in the co-main event of UFC 313. Such a loss. Such a devastating loss to a card which honestly really needed that fight to make it a really good card. I'm not saying Alex Pereira versus Magomed Ankalaev isn't a banger main event. No. I'm just saying overall is a great card that really added to it. So now we wonder what is going to be next for Justin Gaethje. And there have been a couple of rumors. You know, some people are saying Rafael Fiziev could rematch. Some people are saying Joel Alvarez. And now Moicano has thrown his hat in the ring. Some people are even saying Gene Silva. I don't know. But whatever Dana White announces, I believe it is going to be in regards to that, as we are just about, I think it is 9 days away, maybe 10 days away from this. So we're definitely going to be getting a replacement. If it was me and I had to pick, I'd probably say Fiziev or Moicano, just because they're in the rankings. But if they hit us with a Gene Silva, Joel Alvarez, that would be fantastic. So hopefully that's the case. As for official fights that have been announced, we recently got our UFC Kansas City main event not but 10 minutes ago, as the number 4 ranked light heavyweight Jamal Sweet Dreams Hill takes on the number 7th ranked Khalil Roundtree Jr. This is just the fight that made sense. I feel like myself and every other creator out there was just predicting that was going to be next, and sure as heck, that's what's next. And honestly, I love it. Someone's going to sleep. That's all I know for sure. And when I look at the last guys that these people have lost to, you know, Jamal Hill has lost to Jiří Procházka and Alex Pereira, and Khalil Roundtree Jr. has lost to Alex Pereira. So these guys are as legit as they come. Winner of this will be ranked number 4, number 3 in the world. My money's on Khalil Roundtree Jr., but anything can happen. That is a phenomenal main event to give Kansas City. Look at the main. I'm not saying the main events we're getting on the Apex cards aren't bad, but look at the main events we're getting in Des Moines. Look at the main events we're getting in London, in Mexico, and now in Kansas City. You get very good main events unless you get blessed with Rose Namajunas when you have an audience for a event. Other fights that have been announced. This one for UFC Vegas 106 going down May 31st as Dustin Jacoby takes on Bruno Lopez in the men's light heavyweight division. Bruno Lopez won his debut against Magomed Gatsiev-Luev. He actually holds a win over Gregory Rodriguez on the independent scene of MMA with a 14-1 record. As for Dustin Jacoby, he kind of got blitzed by Dominic Reyes, so he's looking to get back in the win column. I'm sure that he will. He's got an 8-6-1 in the UFC, but Bruno Lopez, he's 14-1, proven to be a formidable challenge. Other fights for you. UFC Vegas 105 going down April 5th. Middleweight action is Gerald Meerschaert takes on Brad Tavares. And that's just one of those matchups where it's like, okay, who are two veteran middleweights that haven't fought each other yet? That's exactly what this matchup is, comedically enough. My money's on Gerald Meerschaert. My humble opinion, Gerald Meerschaert is an absolute dog, and when he loses, he only loses to tough SOBs. I'm not saying Brad Tavares doesn't do the same thing, but for that matchup, my money is on Gerald Meerschaert. Some unfortunate news for UFC Mexico, Mexico City, March 29th, as Elvis Brenner is out of his contest against Daniel Zaluber. In to take his place is Austin Hubbard. Now, I think this is a great opportunity for Daniel Zaluber to get back in the win column. He's 15-2. Of course, lost that heater to Esteban Ribovic, who we'll actually mention later. I think he can get back in the win column here. Austin Hubbard, 4-6 in the UFC, was runner-up on this past season of The Ultimate Fighter. He's about as average of a lightweight as you can get, so we'll see how that matchup goes. I'm picking Zaluber any day of the week. Here's one that I'm surprised in for the light heavyweight division, as Junior Tafa will be returning as he takes on Tuco Tugokes in Des Moines, Iowa, May 3rd. You know, Junior Tafa, 6-3, he's just taking some rough losses. I mean, oh my goodness, him and Justin Tafa, terrible luck at the draw. They've just been absolutely, you know, at one point I thought they're gonna be legit, and they've kind of been struggling. But he's getting fed one here in Tuco Tugokes, who's 0-2 in the UFC, 10-5 professionally. If Junior Tafa doesn't win this, he might be one of the worst MMA fighters of all time. Here's one. Melquizel Costa returns against Christian Rodriguez at UFC Mexico in Mexico City, Mexico. It's just fine. I keep saying that, but that's just what it's listed as. Melquizel just submitted Andre Feely last week. Already has a fight book for March 29th. I love the activity from him. If no one knows, Christian Rodriguez is notoriously famous for only being able to beat undefeated up-and-comers and losing to experienced fighters like Melquizel Costa. So my money's on Melquizel Costa, but if Christian Rodriguez can break the curse, good for him. And here's the final. Actually, we'll mention a couple more. Jose Aldo back in action. The number 11th ranked bantamweight takes on Amin Zahabi at UFC 315 in Quebec, Canada. Jose Aldo, you know, legend of the game. Recently lost to Mario Bautista. He's looking to get back in the win column as he takes on Amin Zahabi, who as of late beat Javed Bashrat and Pedro Munoz. He's been on a crazy run. He's been incredible. He's in the rankings, and I expect nothing but delicious, delicious performances from him. Such a weird word for me to use, but delicious performance is what I'm going with. And here's the last one we'll talk about as well for UFC 315. Jasmine Jasu Devicius, the number 9 women's flyweight in the world, will take on the number 7th ranked, the former world champion. That is Jessica Andrade. I love that matchup. Love that matchup. It makes sense. It works. And we're finally giving Jasmine opportunities that she very much deserves. And she gets that. It's probably going to be on the main card. She's in front of her home nation of Canada. I love that matchup for her. Now, before we go on and look at the NBA and NHL standings, let me just quickly update you on the UFC rankings, as we got a lot of ranking updates from this past weekend. So, first off, in no relation to anything that happened, Leon Edwards is now tied with Alexander Pantoa for being the number 9 ranked pound-for-pound fighter on the planet. I don't know if they just wanted to beef him up before he takes on Sean Brady March 22nd. Super random. No idea why they did that. For the men's bantamweight division, Song Yadong, of course, moves up 2 spots from 8 to 6. Rob Font is now at 8. Henry Cejudo drops down to 9. And Marlon Vera is at 7. Song Yadong, big opportunities ahead. A number 6 versus number 3 matchup against Umar Nurmagomedov makes complete sense to me. Marlon Vera at 7 is, of course, taking on the number 10 Mario Bautista coming up. Rob Font at 8 and Henry Cejudo at 9. I don't really know what to do with them career-wise, so we'll have to see. And the signs were there with Amin Zahabi as he was moved from 14 to 13 over Marcus McGee. They're trying to beef him up before his fight with Jose Aldo. Men's middleweight division is where we head next, as Anthony Hernandez moves up 3 spots to now be the number 9 ranked world middleweight on the planet. I predict he'll fight the number 7th ranked Jared Cannonier at some point in the later part of this year, but he is exactly where he needs to be. In other words, Bo Nickel booted from the number 15 spot in the rankings for Reiner Day Ritter. Reiner Day Ritter is now in the rankings. I'm sure he'll be taking on someone like Brendan Allen coming up. As for Bo Nickel, I think they're going to try and do Bo Nickel Paulo Costa. That is my prediction. That's what I think is going to happen. Maybe that's what Dana White has to announce. And lastly, for the men's light heavyweight division, Alonzo Menafield passes Anthony Smith from 15 to 14, which gives me the feeling that they're going to have him take on a ranked opponent next. I don't know necessarily who he could be taking on, but it could be anyone at men's light heavyweight. Those are all your new updates as of right now, but I'm sure whenever Dana White comes on and spews his knowledge, you're going to be getting a bunch of new updates. So, with that, let's move to our NBA and NHL check-ins, because we haven't done this in a while. I don't know if this is going to be a weekly thing, but whenever I want to fill up an episode with something, it's always something we can look at. So, current state of the NBA, let's kick it off with the Eastern Conference. Cavaliers, number 1 still, 48-10. They're on an 8-game winning streak, 27-4 at home, 9-1 over their last 10 games. They have been playing fantastic basketball. And they're obviously the number one team. And second, the Celtics, 42-16. They're on a six-game winning streak and are 31-9 in their conference. The reigning champions will look to make another run this year, but it's looking tough. You know, you got the Knicks at 3, they're 37-20. Pacers at 4, 32-24. Then you get into your Bucks, your Pistons. The Magic and Hawks are always average. Heat and Bulls, pretty similar. Bottom of the barrel, worst team in the league is the 10-47 Wizards. You also have the 14-43 Hornets and the 18-40 Raptors. One of those teams is going to be getting Cooper Flagg, though, so I'm sure some of them are happy. My prediction for this conference, I mean, right now I think the Celtics have a lot of potential to repeat, but I really like the Knicks odds when we get into the playoff category. Still don't really have anyone clinching spots yet. You have roughly just under 30 games left for the year. It might be at 26 maybe, where we're at 25, actually 22. Some amount of games left. I think it's 24, actually, as I'm doing my math before we are done with the season. It might actually be 30. I'm done saying any of that. That's the current state of the Eastern Conference. For the Western Conference, the Thunder are the top team, 46-11. They're 8.5 games ahead of the team in second place, which is the Grizzlies. But hey, the Thunder lost the other night. They gave up 25 points to the Timberwolves. My Timberwolves currently sitting at 7th. 32-27. They're coming off a win here. They've been about as average as you can get. 16-14 at home. 16-13 at the road. They just play games super, super close. In the middle of the pack, Nuggets at 3 with 38-20 as a record. Lakers 35-21. They're on a 3-game win streak. Rockets 36-22. Clippers 31-26 on a 3-game losing streak. Warriors at 8 are 31-27 on a 4-game winning streak. Mavericks have dropped their last two. They're now 9th in the conference. Jazz are at 15th. 14-53 are the worst team in the West. And the Pelicans, 15-43, are also not looking too hot, if I'm being honest. Pelicans are doing pretty rough. Spurs 24-32. Dude, it's impossible. It is impossible, guys, for NBA 2K25, whenever I log on and I do a simulation of a season, it's impossible for them to not make the Spurs good, because I don't think the automation system can comprehend having 7-foot tall Victor Wembanyama, who can shoot and dribble and everything. I just think that's kind of a funny talk side point. I'm obviously going to pick the Timberwolves to win the NBA Finals. If I'm being realistic, it's looking like it might be another Nuggets and the Lakers versus the Celtics situation. I'd say maybe the Thunder, but I don't know. I just get the feeling the Thunder aren't going to be as good. And when the playoffs come around, you guys should all let me know your current thoughts on the NBA. Transitioning from the court to the ice, let's take a quick little check-in with the NHL, as they've been getting along. I mean, they've played just about 58, 57, 59 games each. Season's winding down just about the same rate as the NBA. Let's look at who are the top teams. In the Eastern Conference, let's look at the Atlantic Division first. Leading the Atlantic is the Maple Leafs, 36-20-2. They've been great. You also have the Panthers at 35-21-3 and the Lightning at 33-24, who are all in the 70-point category. Maple Leafs are on a 3-game win streak. Lightning are actually on a 6-game winning streak, 7-2-1 over their last 10. Red Wings are 8-1-1 over their last 10, and they're on a 2-game winning streak. They're 4th in their division. Bottom of the division, the Sabres, 24-27-5. They have a negative 7-point differential. They've seen better days. Bruins on a 4-game losing streak, as well as the Senators. They could really use it, as they're in the middle of the pack. But the best team by a margin is the Washington Capitals, 38-12-8. They have 84 points as a team. You know, despite going 5-2-3 over the last 10, they are just 10 points ahead from the next closest person in their conference, and they're 14 points ahead of the next closest person in their division, which is the 33-21-4, the 70-point Hurricanes. Devils also have 70 points. Blue Jackets have 64, 2-game win streak. Rangers 20. Rangers are at 62 as well, 2-game win streak. Flyers with 59 are on a 3-game win streak. Bottom of the division is the 23-29 with 55 points, the Penguins. But Sabres are the worst team in the league, and with that, they're only negative 7-point differential. They've gone 7-3. You know, the Eastern, or whatever you want to call it, the Eastern Conference is far better than the Western Conference, I think, in terms of record-wise, because when we get into the Western Conference, we still have the worst team in the league, which is the 17-34-7 with only 41 points, the Blackhawks, who have just been atrocious. And as I say that, I now looked out at the Pacific Division, and you got the Sharks, who only have 15 wins, 36 losses, has 8 overtime losses with 38 points. 6-game losing streak as well. See, what is it? The Sharks and Blackhawks haven't improved a lick from last year. They may even be worse. I don't know what's going on with those franchises, but back-to-back years, they are at the bottom and nothing is working. I'll tell you what is working, and that is the best team in the league, the 85-point, 10-game win streak, 10 and over the last 10, that is, the Winnipeg Jets. 41-14-3. Incredible from them. Incredible. Second best team in the Western Conference, Dallas Stars, 37-19-2. They got 76 points. You also have the Golden Knights with 74. They're the top team of the Pacific Division. Then you get into your fourth or fifth best team, Wild, 34-20-4. They have 72 points. And the Kings, or no, actually the Oilers, 34-20-4 with 72 points. But they're on a 4-game losing streak. So not the best. Wild shockingly lost to the Red Wings last night after being up with under 10 minutes. It's tough, tough looks. It's been a good season for the Wild. Wild and Timberwolves have been playing really good. I think the Wild have been playing better. They just need Kirill back. They have a lot of other injuries as well on their team. If they can get all of that back, they can be even better than where they are right now. Of course, Blackhawks, bottom of the barrel for the Pacific. Sharks, bottom of the barrel. You got the Kings in there, 31-17-7. They got 69 points. Flames with 64 points. Canucks with 63. Ducks and Kraken probably falling into the lower half of the season. I don't know who my favorite is. You know, Jets and Capitals are currently the top two teams. Only teams in the 80-point category, which is, I find it fascinating. If no one knows, you get, I think it's 2 points for a win, 1 point for an overtime loss, if that's how I think it works properly. If it was up to me, you know, I'd pick the Wild to do well, but they are pretty similar to the Timberwolves, is where they get to the playoffs, and they suddenly forget how to play their primary sport. I will say for our fantasy hockey league, I am currently second in the league, I think it is, but I've been doing pretty good, 12-4 record. Our playoffs will be kicking off in 2 or 3 weeks or so, and I'll see how I do, but I think that's all we got for the NHL and the NBA. It's exciting stuff. Exciting stuff with these leagues. They always got stuff going on, and we might check in every other week or something. I mean, this doesn't have to be a weekly recurring thing that we're going to do. I don't know. It's fun. It's a good time. That's how it works when we're talking about NBA and NHL. But there's so many games. So many games. Imagine if you watched every single NHL and NBA game, you'd have to watch, even just for your team, even if you were to watch every Wild and Timberwolves game right there combined, you're watching 164 games, which is just absurd to me. I'll tell you what else is absurd, and that is that we haven't looked at discussing film in a fat minute. I decided I'd give it a week or two break, and finally we're back and we're ready to look at all the new things that discussing film has to offer for us. And by the way, I haven't even been looking at updates. I have been silencing notifications to be surprised when I log on. So let's go on and look at the top 10 new things in pop culture. So first off, number one, Keanu Reeves, when asked if he has anything left to accomplish in life, he says he wants to go to Mars, which does give off weird, super evil villain vibes. I don't know what to make of that, but I trust that Keanu Reeves is a good human being and that he means nothing cynical by that, but you never know. You never really know with these celebrities. You know, if you are, the one thing you want to still accomplish is get off this planet and live on a different planet. I mean, it's a pretty insane goal. Now, I won't lie, it does give off some weird vibes. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm the weirdo. Maybe I'm the person that needs to be monitored. Number two, AMC CEO Adam Aaron says 17-day and 30-day theatrical windows are too short, and there's a very live debate right now to have movies in theaters for longer. We would like to convince all the major studios that they should keep movies in theaters longer. I mean, I kind of get that. I'd keep a movie in for maybe 2 months. 2 months to run a movie could actually work out pretty good. Now, I just can't lie. You know, it's after a month, it does lose its hype. And I think it's just, is it worth still running the movie if no one's filling up the theater? But then again, if even you get one person, that's still pretty good. I mean, you're still making a profit off of that. At least I think you are. I don't really know how profits and unprofits work in that business. That is not my specialty. Number three, the new teaser for the final season of You is out, releasing April 24th on Netflix. I'll have to watch that as I am unaware of what could happen in the final season. I'm sure Joe's going to get caught. He's either going to die or they're going to like pull a little Dexter and like fake kill him and he escapes. I don't know, but I'm kind of pumped for it. I have so many shows to watch right now, you know, Invincible, Reacher, Ted Lasso. I have, whenever I have time to watch TV, I have more than ample stuff. And when You comes out, that'll just be another show that I get to watch. Number four, Colin Farrell says he is conflicted on doing a Penguin season two. He says, I would hate to, just because of a quote unquote success, have to go again and for it to be a diluted version of what people seem to feel it is. I'm in no rush. I have no deep desire to do it. Yeah, I wouldn't make another TV series about the Batman when you don't even have the sequel to the Batman out anymore. I think that is pretty interesting. Pretty interesting, if you ask me. I don't know. That's your fun thing. Number five, first look at the live-action Masters of the Universe film. Stars Nicholas Galtinzi as He-Man and Jared Leto as Skeletor in theaters on June 5th, 2026. That sounds like an interesting premise. I find that very odd. I don't even know what to make of that personally. Number six, new teaser for Andor Season 2 has been... The first trailer for Andor Season 2 has been released. That's what it is. Premiering April 22nd on Disney+. Another Star Wars show I haven't watched because it is a prequel to a prequel. When do you ever see a prequel to a prequel that then gets a sequel? How about that? It's a little tongue twister for you. It's a prequel to a prequel that gets a sequel. I think I can make that into something. I think I can make that. Number seven, Timothée Chalamet has won Best Actor for A Complete Unknown at the SAG Awards. Timothée Chalamet taking over the industry. He says he wants to be one of the greats, and he is right on track. I don't know. Good for him. That's exciting stuff. Timothée Chalamet, good for you. Number eight, Jessica Gunning has won Best Actress in a Limited Series for Baby Reindeer. She played the crazy stalker or whatever, and she played her so well. She played her so well that the lady sued her for how well she played it. That's when you know she's a good actress. So good for her. Glad to see that. Man, she made that character so hateable to the point where you could almost hate the actress, but we're not going to do that because we are good human beings. You got to remember that movies are fake. They don't even exist. Number nine, honestly, a lot of stuff with these awards, which I care less about. Now, Fall Guy has won Best Movie Stunts at the SAG Awards. Yeah, that makes sense. It's a movie about a stunt guy. You would think that it would win stunt thing. I have no idea. It is what it is. And finally, let's end this out right here because honestly, we haven't missed anything since we last checked in. Dave Bautista wants Netflix to move forward with their Gears of War movie. It's not like I'm badgering them. Come on, Netflix, get it together. That's what he has to say. So good for you, Dave, sticking up for yourself. I'm going to be honest, guys. We might be cutting this segment, you know. We have just haven't had any big updates as of late. We pushed this off for over a week. I don't know. Our discussing film days may be coming to an end. I don't know. But here is your breaking news right now, live coming to you from the Surprise Jet Podcast. Dana White did just announce that Justin Gaethje will now fight Rafael Fiziev at UFC 313. That's not really too much of breaking news. I could have predicted that with my eyes closing in a weird way. I kind of did, but that's all we got for discussing film. I say we get into ranking every single Elimination Chamber event. I went through, I looked at all of them, I remembered what I've seen, what I haven't seen, I guess I've remembered what I haven't seen, and I ranked them all from the best to the worst. We're going to go worst to best because we like to end on a good note. So let's get right on into our ranking. Kicking off our list with number 14 is the 2020 Elimination Chamber event. This went down March 8th, 2020, which was right before the pandemic officially kicked off. It came to you from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania at the Wells Fargo Center. And this card is just bad. This card is just bad, top to bottom. Let me read you some of the matchups. First off, kicking off the card, Daniel Bryan taking on Drew Gulak. Interesting. You then have a singles match for the WWE United States Championship, Andrade defeating Humberto Carrillo. You then have an Elimination Chamber match for the SmackDown Tag Team Championship. That's right, an Elimination Chamber match where The Miz and John Morrison defeated The New Day, The Usos, Heavy Machinery, Lucha House Party, and Dolph Ziggler and Robert Roode. I mean, what a waste of an Elimination Chamber. You then have Aleister Black defeating AJ Styles in a no disqualification match. That was pretty decent. The Street Profits defeating Seth Rollins and Murphy in a tag team match. Very interesting. And then you have the Artist Collective, which is Sami Zayn, Shinsuke Nakamura, and Cesaro defeating Braun Strowman in a 3-on-1 handicap match. And the main event, you have a Women's Elimination Chamber match to get a Women's Championship match at WrestleMania. Shayna Baszler defeating Natalya, Liv Morgan, Asuka, Ruby Riott, and Sarah Logan. I mean, what an awful main event. There is really no big names in here. You get Daniel Bryan, you get Shinsuke Nakamura. No, you get Seth Rollins. This was just a mess from head to toe, and I still don't even know how this happened. You know, WWE was in a pretty brutal spot in 2020, and this is just evident of this. This is just unrewatchable. Nothing's entertaining about this, and just a bad, bad main event. Main event is what makes a lot of these, and this one just didn't have it. To make matters worse, actually, to make matters better, next year's was better, but mind you, the 2021 Elimination Chamber had no crowd. Coming to you from St. Petersburg, Florida, at the WWE Thunderdome at Tropicana Field. I mean, this was peak COVID pandemic. No one was in attendance, so all these matchups didn't even have an audience. And you had some of the craziest booking decisions on this. Like, the booking decisions on here were utterly absurd. Kicking us off, Daniel Bryan wins a Elimination Chamber match for an immediate Universal Championship matchup. This is against Prime Roman Reigns. So, mind you, 34 and a half minutes of wrestling. Daniel Bryan defeats Cesaro, Jey Uso, Kevin Owens, King Corbin, Sami Zayn. Decent roster for the Elimination Chamber match. Then immediately takes on Prime Roman Reigns, who submits him in a minute and 35 seconds. Just, does that even count as a matchup? I mean, who thought it was a good idea to do an immediate Universal Championship match? I understand if you were to have it in the main event, but right after? Very weird. And by the way, WWE's done this before and it's been successful. This was more of just like, oh, we just watched this banger matchup. Now Roman Reigns and Daniel Bryan only have a minute and 35 seconds and Roman Reigns squashes him. I didn't know what to make of it. You then had a triple threat match for the United States Championship. Riddle won the belt from Bobby Lashley and John Morrison. Remember when Riddle was in WWE? So do I. The fourth match of the night, Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler defeating Bianca Belair and Sasha Banks for the Women's Tag Team Championship. Not very memorable. I didn't even know Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler were a team. Then, in what we thought was the main event, Drew McIntyre defending his WWE Championship against AJ Styles, Jeff Hardy, Kofi Kingston, Randy Orton, and Sheamus in a half-hour Elimination Chamber match. It's a good Elimination Chamber. You know, nothing to complain about this. Very good ending. Drew McIntyre wins. Then The Miz cashes in a Money in the Bank contract and ends the night winning the WWE Championship. I mean, what? That in itself is pretty crazy. The only reason it lands here is because there's no crowd, there was no shock reaction, and by the way, The Miz lost it a week later. There was nothing really entertaining about this. Pauses from this, some good Elimination Chambers. Yeah, Roman Reigns defending the belt. That's about all I got. 2021, didn't have a crowd, yet still not as bad as 2020. Moving in, number 12, 2024. That's right, last year's Elimination Chamber event, which went down in Perth, Australia, just didn't hit. By the way, 500,000 people in attendance for this, 52,000. And here's the thing, only four matchups. By the way, five for the whole card. The Women's Tag Team Championship match was a prelim. It was a prelim, so if you were in attendance, or unless you're watching on YouTube, this wasn't actually a part of the official event. Kicking things off, you have an Elimination Chamber match for a Women's World Championship at WrestleMania. Becky Lynch defeating Bianca Belair, Liv Morgan, Naomi, Raquel Rodriguez, and Tiffany Stratton. Probably the best match of the evening. That actually, hands down, this was the best matchup of the evening. Best Elimination Chamber of the two we had. Becky Lynch winning was very entertaining. I mean, no one really thought Raquel Rodriguez, Naomi were going to win, but seeing Becky Lynch win is always entertaining. After that, you had a Undisputed WWE Tag Team Championship matchup as the Judgment Day, Finn Balor and Damian Priest, defeated New Catch Republic, Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate. Pretty good tag team championship match, but yet nothing spectacular. We know that New Catch Republic has had five-star matchups in NXT, and we know Damian Priest and Finn Balor have had far better matchups. That was that. Then, third matchup, your Elimination Chamber match for a World Heavyweight Championship match at WrestleMania 40. This one went 37 minutes as Drew McIntyre defeated Bobby Lashley, Kevin Owens, LA Knight, Logan Paul, and Randy Orton. Here's the issue with this. You know, everyone kind of thought Drew McIntyre was going to win. I mean, no one really thought Bobby Lashley. Kevin Owens is a maybe. LA Knight, they never pulled the trigger on, so I knew that wasn't going to happen. And then Logan Paul just always costing a legend. Him costing Randy Orton, it was just ugh. It was just ugh. And then Drew McIntyre wins. It was okay. It's just brutally okay. That's all we had for it. It wasn't the most memorable chamber ever. It was just there. Following that, the main event of the evening, Rhea Ripley defending the Women's World Championship against Nia Jax. Now, here's the thing. Rhea Ripley main evented because she's from Australia and she was super over. I'm not going to say she's not over now. She's still over, but this was prime Rhea Ripley being over. And main eventing against Nia Jax, you could already know from the get-go this wasn't going to be a five-star matchup, but it kind of under-delivered. Now, mind you, crowd still loved Rhea Ripley, but just four matchups on this card, none of them really hit. Mind you, still not as bad as the previous two that we've talked about. But like I said, lackluster all around. Probably the Women's Elimination Chamber was the best in the night. get into it with number 11, 2018, the 2018 Elimination Chamber, coming to you from the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. Actually, I think it's in Paradise if you want to get specific, but in Nevada. And this is just, one of the worst chambers I've ever watched. Now, I'm going to clarify why it's not the bottom, but kicking off, Alexa Bliss in the first ever Women's Elimination Chamber match beats Sasha Banks, Bayley, Mickie James, Sonya Deville, and Mandy Rose. It wasn't bad, it's just the pace you expected. By the way, last year's Women's Elimination Chamber, the best to date. This one, the pace was a bit slower. They took a couple occasional bumps, but by the way, you were just getting into it with this. Alexa Bliss retaining was a good move. This was okay. Following that, Cesaro and Sheamus defeating Titus Worldwide, Apollo and Titus O'Neil, to retain the Raw Tag Team Championships. It was brutally okay. Cesaro and Sheamus defended those belts a lot. That's all I got to say about that. Fourth match of the evening, which I guess is the third. They had a little prelim matchup. Asuka defeating Nia Jax by pinfall. The stipulation, if Jax had won, she would have been added to the Chosen Women's Championship match at WrestleMania 34. It was unnecessary. I'm not a fan of Nia Jax personally. She's not my guilty pleasure or anything. I'm just not that entertained by her wrestling matchups. Asuka wins, as expected. She was on a huge winning streak, by the way. Had never lost before. She wasn't going to lose right before WrestleMania. Second last matchup of the night, Matt Hardy defeating Bray Wyatt. Just a weird feud. Their matchups never really hit, but by the way, one of the last few times we were able to see Bray Wyatt, you know, in his final few years, so I will never complain about seeing Bray Wyatt. Matt Hardy, he was very weird at this role, but there it is. And finally, the main event, the fifth match of the evening, the Elimination Chamber match for a WWE Universal Championship match at WrestleMania 34 against Brock Lesnar in a 40-minute, 15-second Elimination Chamber match. Roman Reigns defeats Braun Strowman, Seth Rollins, Finn Balor, John Cena, Elias, and The Miz. This was the highlight of the evening. Mind you, it was kind of like we're watching this, we're all kind of thinking like, okay, I would like to see, you know, Braun Strowman, Seth Rollins, Finn Balor, John Cena win. Maybe even Elias and The Miz, just not Roman Reigns. And Braun Strowman's going, and he takes out Elias. You're like, okay, bye-bye Elias. Then he takes out The Miz. Okay. Then he takes out Finn Balor. You're kind of like, oh, you know, I would have liked to see Finn Balor. Then he takes out John Cena. And you're like, okay, no John Cena at WrestleMania. Then he takes out Seth Rollins, and it's Braun Strowman versus Roman Reigns, and everyone knew they're just not going to have Braun Strowman main event WrestleMania 34 against Brock Lesnar. Sure enough, Roman Reigns wins. It was bittersweet just seeing this. This was not prime Roman Reigns. This was forced us down our throat Roman Reigns. This wasn't even, I'm going to go leave because I have leukemia. This was, we didn't even know he had leukemia. Roman Reigns is just brutal to watch, so Roman Reigns wins this. It was a phenomenal chamber matchup, but seeing Braun Strowman eliminate everyone and then Roman Reigns eliminate him, it wasn't all that. None of the other matchups are really mind-blowing, but that's why it lands at number 11. With that, let's get into the top 10. So checking in at number 10 is the 2015 Royal Rumble. 2015 coming to you from Corpus Christi, Texas at the America Bank Center. And 41,000 people watching this. Phenomenal. It's just, here's the thing, just some weird decisions here. This is where they finally diverted from the normal course of things, kicking us off your first ever tag team Elimination Chamber match where the New Day retained their titles against the Primetime Players, Tyson Kidd and Cesaro, The Ascension, remember them if you watch WWE, The Lucha Dragons, and Los Matadores. And it's not that it was bad, it's just that there were so many people in this, so many people, it kind of became overwhelming. So that's what's going to happen there. It is what it is. I'm getting a little flustered here, guys. We actually have more breaking news from Dana White right now. Bryce Mitchell is going to fight Gene Silva at UFC 313. Oh my gosh, they're actually doing Bryce Mitchell versus Gene Silva at UFC 313. That's insane. Let's get back to it. 2015 card, Nikki Bella retains the Divas Championship. We still had the Divas Championship in 2015. NXT champion Kevin Owens defeating United States champion John Cena in a 20-minute champion versus champion match. Highlight of the night. That was phenomenal. Also had Neville defeating Bo Dallas is what it is. Then you had your second Elimination Chamber match, which was for the Intercontinental Championship. And Ryback won it, defeated Sheamus, Dolph Ziggler, Mark Henry, R-Truth, and King Barrett. We want the big belts. We want the World Heavyweight Championship, the Universal Championship. We don't want to see the Intercontinental Championship. No, no, no. Then the main event, you had a singles match for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. And by the way, this was in the summer. This wasn't even before WrestleMania, where Dean Ambrose defeated Seth Rollins, who was the champion, by disqualification. So very unnecessary, not needed. Roman Reigns was barred from ringside was the stipulation. Just weird booking all around. But nonetheless, there wasn't too much to be really mad about. It was good wrestling all around. And, you know, the booking decisions were kind of odd, but nothing to really make us go, this is terrible. You know, obviously it wasn't the best, but it wasn't terrible. Checking in at number 9 is the 2022 Elimination Chamber, which came to you from Saudi Arabia. And the Saudi Arabian cards always give us some interesting booking decisions. A lot of these have to do with booking decisions. 6 matches on here. Kicking off this card, Roman Reigns defending his Universal or WWE Championship, whatever it was, in the main event. Actually, I think it was the Universal Championship at this point, and he defeated Goldberg by technical submission. Interesting decision. Very interesting decision here. But this is prime Roman Reigns. Prime Roman Reigns, Goldberg's on the card. People love Goldberg. That's what it was. Then you had your first Elimination Chamber match, which was for a WWE Raw Women's Championship match at WrestleMania 38. Bianca Belair won this. Shocking factor. By the way, having a Women's Elimination Chamber match, having a black woman win it in Saudi Arabia, huge for women's rights, good for Bianca Belair. After that, Naomi and Ronda Rousey defeating Charlotte Flair and Sonya Deville by submission. Ronda Rousey had to wrestle with one arm tied behind her back. Vince McMahon is a goofy, goofy mofo. Drew McIntyre then won a Falls Count Anywhere match against Madcap Moss. How was just why? Why did that happen? Becky Lynch then defended the Raw Women's Championship against Lita. Props to Lita, still going at it in her 40s. Might have been in her late 30s, I don't know. Then the main event, one of the worst Elimination Chamber matches you'll ever see. Not the worst, but 15 minutes. Brock Lesnar eliminates Bobby Lashley, your champion, AJ Styles, Austin Theory, Riddle, and Seth Freakin' Rollins all by himself. I kid you not. He came in at the number 5 spot as Bobby Lashley was ruled unable to compete before the show, meaning we would get a new champion. Lesnar comes in, eliminates Austin Theory, eliminates Seth Freakin' Rollins, eliminates Riddle, and then eliminates AJ Styles. That is all I have to say. I actually think Austin Theory might have been the final person left for some reason. Brock Lesnar, this is just where, you know, Vince McMahon was making Brock Lesnar defeat everyone he faced. It was in Saudi Arabia. The booking decisions were weird here, but it lands at number 9 for me. Checking in at number 8, similar to some others, you know, this one, 2017 Elimination Chamber in Phoenix, Arizona. It's the main event saved it. The main event saved it, you know. Kicking us off, Becky Lynch defeats Mickie James in a pinfall match. Okay. Apollo Crews then and Kalisto defeat Dolph Ziggler in a handicap match. Why did we see that? American Alpha then wins a tag team turmoil 21-minute SmackDown Tag Team Championship match, finally eliminating the Ascension to win. Okay. You then have Natalya versus Nikki Bella end in a double countout after 15 minutes. Holy, holy, holy. Randy Orton then defeated Luke Harper in a singles match. Look, Luke Harper has a certain style. Randy Orton has a certain style. I never thought they really connected. Co-main event, Naomi defeating Alexa Bliss to become the new SmackDown Women's Champion. Doing that right before WrestleMania, huge. Kind of a little shock factor there. Then the main event, which saved everything, which is why it lands here at number 8. One of my favorite Elimination Chamber matches, as Bray Wyatt defeated John Cena, AJ Styles, The Miz, Dean Ambrose, Baron Corbin to win the WWE Championship. Such a feel-good moment. By the way, Bray Wyatt's a heel here. You can't help but cheer for him, man. You can't help but be so excited that Bray Wyatt finally won the WWE Championship. And the fact they had John Cena lose so that you knew it would either be AJ Styles or Bray Wyatt to win, a correct booking decision. This was fun. This is similar to 2018, except it was more of a shock factor. That is why it lands at number 8 on our list. At number 7, the 2019 Elimination Chamber coming to you from Houston, Texas. This one, good all around. You had the Boston Hug. Actually, you had an Elimination Chamber match for the inaugural WWE Women's Tag Team Championship. I cannot believe this happened. Bayley and Sasha Banks won it inaugurally. I'm just going to say right off the bat, we don't need tag team championships being contested in the Elimination Chamber. Very unnecessary. Then Usos defeating The Miz and Shane McMahon to win the SmackDown Tag Team Championships. This was not prime Usos, and I forgot that Shane McMahon was just inserting himself into everything. Then you had a handicap match for the Intercontinental Championship as Finn Balor won it over Bobby Lashley and Leo Rush. Interesting feuds they were having going on. Then you had a Ronda Rousey defense of her Raw Women's Championship against Ruby Riott, submitted her in a minute and 40 seconds. They were trying to get this across as sort of her UFC-style performances where she would go out and destroy her opponents. That's what this was, and it made Ronda Rousey look great, but it was kind of unnecessary to a standpoint. Then 10-minute no disqualification match between Baron Corbin and Braun Strowman. It was just about what you'd expect from that match. But like I said, these main events save it. Elimination Chamber match for the WWE Championship, 36 minutes. Daniel Bryan retains, defeating AJ Styles, Jeff Hardy, Randy Orton, Samoa Joe, and Kofi Kingston. And by the way, every single person was eliminated by someone else. This was phenomenal. This was a good main event for the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. At number six, we have the 2023 Elimination Chamber, coming to you from Montreal, Quebec, Canada, at the Bell Center. And one of my favorite main events that they've ever done, ever. Five matchups on this card. Starting it off, Asuka wins the Elimination Chamber for a Raw Women's Championship match at WrestleMania. Good for her. That was that. Then Bobby Lashley defeating Brock Lesnar by disqualification in a singles match. Very unnecessary. Edge and Beth Phoenix defeating Rhea Ripley and Finn Balor in a mixed tag team matchup. It was okay. You then had just an awful, awful Elimination Chamber match. Whoever decided the United States Championship needed to be contested in the Elimination Chamber is off of some drugs. Austin Theory defeating Bronson Reed, Damian Priest, Johnny Gargano, Montez Ford, and Seth Freak Rollins. It was just not it. Mind you, this was their major push for Austin Theory, and his push was just, it just never landed. Never landed, and even having him win an Elimination Chamber match did nothing for his career. But the main event, Roman Reigns, the undisputed WWE Universal Champion, taking on Sami Zayn in his home country, home state, home Providence, his hometown of Quinnipiac. Where's the Bell Center at? Let me go back. This is Montreal. Montreal, 31 minutes of near falls. The crowd was so behind Sami Zayn, and WWE actually made you think Sami Zayn was going to win. He hit Roman Reigns with three straight Huluva kicks, and then the 2.9999999999 kick out. Oh my goodness. I actually thought Sami Zayn was about to win this right before WrestleMania. They obviously didn't. Roman Reigns prevailed, but this was a fantastic main event. You could argue this is the best main event that has ever happened at Elimination Chamber event. This was phenomenal. That's why this lands at number six. Just because of that. The rest of the card, very, very mid. And number five, the top five, getting into it. We have the 2012 Elimination Chamber coming to you from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Very much so. This one just had incorrect bout order. That's one of the main reasons why this one was so goofy. I don't know who decided the main event needed to be John Cena versus Kane in an ambulance match, but it didn't need to be. Kicking us off, WWE Championship Elimination Chamber. CM Punk winning, facing The Miz, Chris Jericho, Kofi Kingston, Dolph Ziggler, and R-Truth. It was great. It was great. And watching CM Punk win, more than happy for the guy. After that, Beth Phoenix defends the Divas Championship against Tamina Snuka. This is the bottom of the barrel for women's wrestling, okay? Ignore that. Then, not even the co-main event, Daniel Bryan defeats Santino Marella, Wade Barrett, Cody Rhodes, Big Show, and The Great Khali to retain the World Heavyweight Championship. And they actually made you think that Santino Marella was going to win again. They teased us back-to-back pay-per-views, they were called back then, for the Royal Rumble and Elimination Chamber, thinking that Santino Marella was going to win. I don't know what Santino was on back then, which actually just appeared on NXT the other night, which was funny to see. I don't know why they thought that we were actually going to believe he was going to win, but he didn't. It was good Elimination Chambers. These are run-of-the-mill Elimination Chambers that just work. Second to last match, Jack Swagger defeats Justin Gabriel to retain the United States Championship. 3 minutes, 48 seconds. Why did that happen? Then John Cena wins, takes on Kane in an ambulance match. It just didn't need to happen. Look, the chamber matches save this one. John Cena in the main event is okay. It lands at number 5. This one did try to be too edgy. It was exactly what it needed to be, and it lands at number 5. At number 4, the 2011 Elimination Chamber event, coming to you from the Oracle Arena in Oakland, California. The second ever Elimination Chamber event put on, and it was so successful. It just worked. Kicking us off, Alberto Del Rio defeating Kofi Kingston by submission. Do what you need to do, Alberto Del Rio. Do what you need to do. Then, Elimination Chamber match for the World Heavyweight Championship. Edge, Rey Mysterio, Kane, Drew McIntyre, Big Show, and Wade Barrett. Phenomenal. Phenomenal. Excellent, excellent stuff. And Edge winning with a crazy Spirit of Rey Mysterio. Oh, so, so good. Then, WWE Tag Team Championship match lasted 5 minutes. The Core defeats Santino Marella and Vladimir Kozlov. What are we doing? What are we freaking doing there? Ignore that. The Miz then defended the WWE Championship against Jerry Lawler. I thought it was Alex Riley. It was Jerry Lawler. That gets an L. But the main event, look, one of the best chamber matches. on these events, that is, to go to the main event of WrestleMania 27, John Cena defeats CM Punk, John Morrison, King Sheamus, because he went King of the Ring, Randy Orton, R-Truth, and it was phenomenal. Phenomenal. John Cena and CM Punk duking it out as the final two is just what we absolutely love to see. Those two should have faced each other at WrestleMania. It is what it is, but John Cena wins here. This was phenomenal. These chamber matches are so good. And just that original first 4 years of this event, they did exactly what they needed to. 2011 lands at number four. At number three, the 2014 Elimination Chamber, which I was in attendance at in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I still know that the theme song was Doomsday by Nero. So, so phenomenal. Now, obviously, this is bias because I was there, but overall, not too bad. Not too bad. They also jammed seven matches on this card. Thank you. Thank you so much. Kicking us off, Big E defeated Jack Swagger to retain the Intercontinental Championship. Interesting stuff. Then I saw the New Age Outlaws defeat the Usos to retain the WWE Tag Team Championships in 2014. I mean, what timeline do I live in? Titus O'Neil then had a feud against Darren Young where he beat him. That was okay. Then just one of the greatest six-man tag team matches potentially ever. Potentially ever. It's up there in the top five. Mind you, almost all of those top five include the Shield as the Wyatt family defeated the Shield. I honestly couldn't remember that the Wyatt family won this, but this was so action-packed. You had people going through the barricade. You had people going through the announce table. They were fighting all over the arena. It was crazy. I absolutely love this. One of the best six-man tag team matches I've ever seen. It was phenomenal. Then Cameron defeats AJ Lee by disqualification for a Divas Championship match. Bottom of the barrel. Second to last matchup, Batista defeating Alberto Del Rio. People were booing Alberto Del Rio. I was actually on an end seat. I had really good seats for this. We were like in row E from like the slanted seats. And there's a guy next to me in the standing way. He's obviously drunk, flicking off Batista. And if you go back and rewatch it, when Batista's standing on the ropes, he actually sees the guy double birding him. And he laughs and kind of points at him, which I thought was funny. But Batista, I was rooting for him. I was glad he won. But people were booing him. I guess no one liked Batista. Then, one of the best Elimination Chamber matchups for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. The only thing that ruins it, this would have been probably my number one, had it not been ruined by interferences. So Randy Orton took on Daniel Bryan, John Cena, Cesaro, Christian, and Sheamus. Everything was going perfect. Then Corporate Kane gets involved and costs Daniel Bryan. Then the Wyatt family costs John Cena. And the interferences were just so unnecessary. They didn't further any storylines. And they really teased us that Daniel Bryan was going to win, which made me even more sad. But Randy Orton won. It's kind of hard to hate Randy Orton. He's freaking Randy Orton. But this is the only premium live event I've gone to for WWE, and it was just so much fun. I enjoyed it so much. And overall, not too bad of a card. Lands at number three. I like it. And number two, you have the 2013 Elimination Chamber coming to you from New Orleans at the New Orleans Arena. This one, action-packed, very underrated. Very, very underrated. Let me read you through this card. Alberto Del Rio defeats The Big Show in a singles match for the World Heavyweight Championship. For some reason, they kept having Alberto Del Rio take on The Big Show on the opening of cards. It was okay, just very random. Then United States Championship matchup has Antonio Cesaro. That's right, Cesaro, when they still had Antonio as his first name. Defeated The Miz. Average. Then one of the most underrated Elimination Chambers to get a matchup against Alberto Del Rio at WrestleMania, Jack Swagger defeated Randy Orton, Chris Jericho, Mark Henry, Kane, Daniel Bryan. I have watched this chamber so many times. It's so good. And even though I don't think Jack Swagger should have won, I think Randy Orton, Chris Jericho, even Daniel Bryan would have given us much better matchups versus Alberto Del Rio at WrestleMania. It was just such a good chamber match. It was just phenomenal. It worked. Double thumbs up. Then The Shield takes on John Cena, Ryback, and Sheamus and beats them in a 15-minute match. I mean, how random. Dolph Ziggler then defeated Kofi Kingston. Caitlyn defeated Tamina Snuka for the Divas Championship. Both of those were 3-minute squash matches. Then the main event, The Rock defeating CM Punk for the WWE Championship. If The Rock was counted out or disqualified, he would have lost the title. And everyone kind of was thinking, The Rock has to lose. There's no way he's going to main event against John Cena again. The Rock sure as hell won, didn't lose his matchup, and beat CM Punk. Now, evidently, I mean, CM Punk probably should have won. I would have rather seen CM Punk versus John Cena, but then we never would have gotten the beautiful masterclass that was CM Punk versus The Undertaker. This match wasn't as good as the Royal Rumble matchup, but nonetheless, it's still The Rock and CM Punk in the main event. So that's why it lands at number two. Decent stuff all around. It is a okay card at best, but still pretty good. And at number one, they've just never been able to replicate what they did with their first one. The first ever Elimination Chamber event, that is, pay-per-view, in 2010 is your best. I mean, no one's been able to top this. No one has been able to top this. Talk about kicking off a card, having John Cena win the WWE Championship by defeating Triple H, Sheamus, Ted DiBiase, Randy Orton, Kofi Kingston, only for Batista to cash in an anytime contract in a successful fashion, kind of giving us a reminiscingness of when Edge cashed in his Money in the Bank on John Cena, squashing him. Batista wins the WWE Championship. Huge shock factor. Then Drew McIntyre defeats Kane to retain the Intercontinental Championship. Random. Lay Cool defeats Gail Kim and Maryse. Random women's tag team match. 3.5 minutes. Mid. The Miz with Big Show defeats MVP to retain the United States Championship. Then just one of the best chambers I've seen. R-Truth, CM Punk, Rey Mysterio, John Morrison, The Undertaker, Chris Jericho in an Elimination Chamber match for the World Heavyweight Championship. 35 minutes, and it ends with Shawn Michaels breaking in the chamber, beating The Undertaker, and watching Chris Jericho sneak away with the win. It was huge. It furthered their storyline. This feud was red freaking hot, and it just hasn't gotten any better than this. These chamber events, the shock factor here, it worked to a T. This is how you successfully do this, WWE. Take notes. Take notes. That's what I'm going to say. But guys, that's all I got. Those are your, those are all of the Elimination Chamber events ranked. You know, I've been thinking about doing the same thing with WrestleMania. I don't know. I want to do some with WrestleMania. WrestleMania comes up April 19th and 20th, I believe the dates are. And I want to do something for that, but I don't know if I should rank all 40 WrestleMania events. There's obviously more. Or if I want to rank every WrestleMania. A lot of ambitious tasks here. Last year, we just kind of went through them all and reviewed them. We're not going to do that, but we'll do something. That's all we got for WWE for this episode, but let's round it out with our UFC Vegas 103 predictions. Got a lot of fun fights for you with lots of thoughts, honestly, in my opinion. I think we'll win a lot of close fights. Let's get right on into it. Kicking off the card, we head to the women's flyweight division as Montana De La Rosa takes on Luiana Dread Carolina. Montana is 13-9-1. Luiana is 11-4. 5'7-5'6". Montana has 1 inch in height. She also has, Luiana has 1 inch in reach. 69-68. Orthodox stance for both of these ladies. Pretty even all around. We've seen these two fight numerous times, not against each other, just in the UFC. Montana is the underdog for this one at plus 124. The 30-year-old is from Texas, and of her 13 wins, has 1 knockout and 8 submissions. We love to see the finishes. Of her 9 losses, she's been finished 3 times, once by knockout, twice by submission. Been with the UFC since 2017. I mean, she's been here and there. Currently has gone 2-3 in her last 5. So she actually snapped a 3-fight losing streak in June last year, beating Andrea Lee by split decision. Back in action here. You never really know what you're going to get with her. But I will say some of those losses, Macy Barber, Tatiana Suarez, Maribel Silva, Viviana Rujo, some tough losses for Montana De La Rosa. So she clearly can fight to a high level. Her opponent is the minus 150 favorite, the 31-year-old Luiana Dread Carolina from Brazil. 4 finishes and 11 wins, 3 knockouts and 1 sub. She has been finished by submission and knockout once each of her 4 losses. Currently on a little 3-fight winning streak, which kicked off in July of 2023, which was actually on the first ever card we did a podcast for, also on Strickland versus Abusmagomedov. You have a sweet place in my heart. She also beat Julia Storylenko in February of last year with a little round 3 TKO and last fought in July, beating Lucia Pudilova. Her losses are to Molly McCann, Joanne Wood, and Ariana Da Silva. I mean, you never know what you're going to get here. I could see grappling from both of them. I could see striking. I think the win streak continues for Luiana Carolina. I just think she gets it done, goes the distance, pulls off the win here. This is 50-50, but I've seen Luiana Carolina fight more than Montana De La Rosa, personally, because I've skipped some Montana De La Rosa fights. I'm sorry, Montana, but I'm going to go with Luiana Carolina to win by decision. This is a toss-up. It could go either way. I hate fights like that. I would rather see an upset on a fight I'm certain on than a close fight and I pick the wrong person. So, Luiana, we're going with you to win this matchup. Moving on, this one is a personal favorite, men's flyweight action, as Charles Energy Johnson takes on Ramazan Temeryov. His nickname is Tumorlod, but I didn't want that to make people think that was his last name. Charles, 17-6, Ramazan, 18-3, 5'9-5'4. Charles has 5 inches in height and 7 inches in reach, 70-63. Switch stance for Charles, orthodox for Ramazan Temeryov. I don't know, boys. I don't know with this one. Currently, Charles Johnson is the number 12 flyweight in the world. Dude has been earning his keep. He's on a 4-fight winning streak. A 34-year-old from Missouri has 10 finishes in his 17 wins, 6 knockouts, 4 subs. He's never been finished in all 6 of his decision losses. Charles, at one point, was 3-3 in the UFC and was on a 3-fight losing streak. Then, out of nowhere, upsets the undefeated Ozzyk Maksum in a fight of the night. Then, retires Jake Hadley from MMA. Then, beats Josh Ovan in a round 3 uppercut knockout performance in the night upset. And then, most recently, in October, defeated Suma Darji in dominant fashion. Charles Johnson is at the peak of his career at 34. And it's hard to picture him losing, dude. He has been doing crazy, crazy things. Now, the only issue is he's taken on a 28-year-old from Uzbekistan who's on a 10-fight winning streak, 11 knockouts, and 1 submission of his 18 wins. He only has 1 submission loss, which was his last loss, which he suffered in 2019. So 6 years he hasn't lost. I mean, Ramazan debuted in October of last year and ran through CJ Vergara, 3 knockdowns in 2 minutes and 50 seconds, earning himself a performance bonus. I am so torn on this matchup. Truly, truly, I'm torn. Odds makers are 2, minus 110 each. Because here we have Ramazan, who's still 6 years younger, win streak, finishes. He has looked incredible. But then Charles Johnson is in the prime of his career. And we know what happens when athletes are in the prime of their career. They rarely lose. It's really true. And Charles has been taking guys close to decisions. Seeing what he did to Ozzyk Maksum was really crazy. That was really crazy, but I don't know. Charles is probably going to pull this out, but I just can't pick against Ramazan Temeryov. I truly can't. Ramazan isn't undefeated either. You know, we keep talking about undefeated fighters losing. He's not undefeated. He's coming off of a massive, massive finish of CJ Vergara, and I just think Charles might get shocked early with getting knocked down, and I could even see Charles dropping round 1, part of round 2, and that goes to a decision, and it goes either man's way. Charles confidently taking round 3. But this should be an interesting matchup. I'm going to go Ramazan. We might even go with a little round 1 knockout, see what he did to CJ Vergara. But this should be a very entertaining matchup. Back to the women's flyweight division for our next matchup as KGB Andrea Lee takes on JJ Aldrich. Andrea Lee 13-10, JJ 13-7. 5'6-5'5, Andrea is 1 inch in height, has 2 inches in reach, 69-67. Orthodox stance for Andrea, southpaw for JJ Aldrich. Andrea Lee is the plus 170 underdog, JJ the minus 205 favorite. Andrea, 36 years old from Louisiana, 8 finishes and 13 wins, 3 knockouts and 5 subs. Of her 10 losses, she's only ever been finished once by submission. She's currently on a 5-fight losing streak, all of them coming by decision, including a couple close split decisions. It's been rough. It's been rough. You know, she started her UFC career off pretty good, 3-0, and then ran to Joanne Wood by split decision and Lauren Murphy by split decision, both of those close, then dropped one to Roxanne Modafferi in a close fight, picked up back-to-back finishes over Antonia Shevchenko and Cynthia Calvillo, then Viviana Rujo, loss, then Macy Barber, loss, then Natalia Silva, loss, Miranda Maverick, loss, and most recently, Montana De La Rosa, loss last June. I think Andrea Lee is way better. I think, you know, she's just suffered some tough losses here. 6 losses of her 10 in the UFC, all of them by decision, including 4 split decisions. That tells me a lot about the fights that she's having. I'm interested to see how she performs here. You know, she's 36. If she loses this, she's either going to get cut or retire. So this is a must win for Andrea Lee. Her opponent, JJ Aldrich, 32 years old from Colorado. Of her 13 wins, 3 knockouts. Of her 7 losses, one is by knockout, 2 are by submission. JJ is coming off a loss to Veronica Hardy back in May of last year. Before that, she had 2 decision wins, including one over Montana De La Rosa. Some of her other losses, Aaron Blanchfield, Ariana Da Silva, been with the UFC since 2016. Kind of a decision merchant, if I'm being honest. Look, I think Andrea Lee, this is a perfect fight for her. I think she's been fighting tough opponents. I don't think JJ Aldrich is that tough. I just think that Andrea Lee cannot get kind of sucked into the style JJ fights. Very casual boxing. She shoots a takedown, maybe gets some clinch work. Andrea needs to take it to her. Andrea needs to remember the younger her 10 years ago when she was a 26-year-old. Channel that. Bring it. We're going with Andrea Lee. Plus, she looks hotter than J.J. Aldrich. Not that looks matter. Winks at Paulo Costa, as I always pick him because he's attractive and he always freaking loses. Next up, men's featherweight action as Danny El Puma Silva is back in action as he takes on Lucas Almeida. Danny, -218 is the favorite, +180. Lucas is the underdog. Danny Silva, 9-1. Lucas, 15-3. Both men are 5'11", 71-inch reach compared to 70-inch reach in favor of Lucas Almeida. Orthodox stance for Almeida, a switch stance for Danny El Puma Silva. This should be a fun one at featherweight, guys. Danny Silva, 28 years old from California, currently rides a 3-fight winning streak. Of his 9 wins, he has 5 knockouts, and his 1 loss was by decision. Came off a Dana White's contender series in 2023. He would debut in March of last year, winning a split decision over the tough Josh Cooley Bowen. He used his grappling in that one, almost riled off a submission. It's just been a while. Been close to a year. Wow, really close to a year, probably just off by 2 weeks since we last seen Danny Silva. You know, he's 28 years young. He currently is on a little win streak. It's just tough when you're off that long. We don't know what Danny Silva we're going to get. He leaned on the grappling in that one. He also had a crazy striking performance on Dana White's Contender Series, but that was over 2 years ago, so we'll see which Danny Silva shows up to this contest. His opponent, the 34-year-old from Brazil, Lucas Almeida. Lucas Almeida back in action of his, if UFC stats are low. Dude, UFC stats, I swear, has been glitched or something. It just doesn't work anymore when I try and click on it or work on it. I don't know. But of his 15 wins, Lucas Almeida has 14 finishes. Wow, 9 knockouts, 5 subs. How about that? Of his 3 losses, he's been knocked out once and submitted once, as he has gone 2-2 in the UFC. Debuted in a fight of the night when he finished Michael Chiesano in round 3. He would get submitted in round 2 by Pat Sabatini in 2023. At the end of 2023, Andre Fili would knock him out in round 1. And then in his lone appearance in June of last year, he would beat Timmy Kwambo by decision. I'm sorry, Lucas Almeida. I just don't think he's able to hang with anyone remotely talented at featherweight. So we are going to go with Danny Silva. Danny Silva is 9-1, the favorite. It's been a while since we last seen him fight, but I think he can take Lucas down, get a submission, and if he can withstand the style that Lucas fights, he'll be peachy and groovy. Dropping down to men's bantamweight as Douglas Silva de Andrade takes on sexy Mexi John Castaneda. 29-6 with 1 no contest. Douglas has seen a lot of action. 21-7. John Castaneda has also seen a lot. 5'7" to 5'6", Douglas has 1 inch in height. 3 inches in reach, though, go to John Castaneda, 71-68. Switch stance for John, orthodox for Douglas Silva de Andrade. Douglas at +235 is the underdog, -290. John comes in as a decent favorite. Douglas Silva de Andrade, 39 years young, we'll even say, from Brazil, 20 knockouts and 2 submissions of those 29 wins. Wow, he has only been knocked out and submitted once of his 6 losses. Douglas, been in the UFC for over a decade now. Look, he's fought in a couple tough guys, Rob Font, Piotr Jan, Marlon Vera, Renan Barão. But as of late, you know, had 2 fights in 2022, 1 fight in 2023, which was his last win over Cody Stamann, which a lot of people like myself did not think he won. You know, not as active. Had 1 lone fight in June of last year, a boring 3-round decision loss to Miles Johns. Douglas Silva de Andrade is just showing his age, and 39, you know, it's pretty old to be fighting. And I watched 40-year-olds fight 2 weeks ago. Let me tell you, it's a tough scene at times. His opponent, John Castaneda, 33 years old, from Minneapolis, Minnesota. You already know. 14 finishes of his 21 wins, 7 by knockout, 7 by sub. Of his 7 losses, he's been knocked out twice. One of those losses was a knee knockout loss to Daniel Santos in October 1st of 2022, which was my birthday. Last win came against Kang Hu Kang in November of 2023. His last loss was to Daniel Marcos in June of last year, where he dropped a decision. Kind of knew that would happen, but still had to ride with them. These two fight a very similar style. They can strike, they can grapple, they go for submissions sometimes. You never know what you're going to get. I'm going to go with John. Look, we do a thing here. If you're from Minnesota, we root for you. Hopefully we can see some Minneapolis, some Minnesota people on that Des Moines card May 3rd. But as for this one, I'm going with sexy Mexi John Castaneda. He trains at the same gym, I think, someone that I know from high school trains at. So that'd be pretty cool if he could win and they could tell me about it. So that's what we have for that. John Castaneda over Douglas Silva de Andrade. We're going to go with decision for that one. Moving back to featherweight. Ooh, some more featherweight action as Ricardo Ramos takes on Chepe Machine Gun Morisco. Can I just make my pick of Chepe? Can I just make my Chepe Mariscal pick? It's going to take a real savage for me to pick against Chepe Mariscal. The -615 favorite, but Ricardo Ramos +365 underdog. This should be a bloodbath. Ricardo Ramos 17-6, Chepe 17-6 as well, with one no contest. 5'9 to 5'7, Ricardo is 2 inches in height and 3 inches in reach. 72-69, orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. Ricardo Ramos, 29 years old from Brazil, 11 finishes of his 17 wins, 4 knockouts and 7 subs. Of his 6 losses, he's been finished 5 times, 3 times by knockout, twice by submission. Hasn't been the distance since 2021. Ricardo has been with the UFC since 2017. He actually holds a win over Amin Zahabi by spinning back elbow, crazy enough. Holds a loss to Said Nurmagomedov, has a spinning back elbow over Danny Cherez. His last 2 losses, round 1 guillotines to Charles Jourdain and Julian Arosa. Did pick up a split decision win over Josh Koulibal in August of 2024. Didn't really think he won that fight, if I'm being honest. I don't actually know how he won that fight, but I'm not the judge. I don't make the rules. It's just my opinion. But Ricardo Ramos back in action, but he's getting knocked out by the machine gun, the killer that is Chepe Mariscal. 32 years old from Colorado, 7-fight winning streak. He's 4-0 in the UFC. Dude is just an absolute savage. 10 finishes and 17 wins, 7 knockouts, 3 subs. Of his 6 losses, he's lost 3 by knockout, but the last time he lost was a decision in 2020, so it's been a while. Chepe, 4-0 in the UFC, wins over Trevor Peak, Jack Jenkins, Morgan Cherie, and Damon Jackson. Just 4 tough guys to beat. 4 tough guys to beat. And Chepe brings it. Truly, Chepe brings it. I mean, that fight against Trevor Peak should have won fight of the night. Jack Jenkins' fight, that was crazy. It had to be stopped. The fight of the night against Morgan Cherie. I mean, Chepe Mariscal is never in a boring fight. I think he's getting a little highlight reel knockout here. We already have him highlighted as I go to highlight him. We already knew he was going to win. Chepe Mariscal, round 2 knockout. With that, I think we get into the main card. I don't really know where the main card starts here. Depends how they switch around the bout order, but as of right now, here will be your final prelim of the evening. Heavyweight action as Austin Lane is back in action as he takes on Mario Pinto. Austin +280, Mario -360. Austin Lane 13-5 with one no contest. Mario 9-0, undefeated. 6'6" to 6'5". Austin Lane has the advantage, and he has 1 inch in reach as well. 80-79, orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. Austin Lane, 37 years old from Florida. This is, of course, the fighter whose cousin goes to the same gym as my mom, and she knows him. Curtis, she actually calls him. He might actually own the gym. I don't really know. Actually, I think he does, which is pretty cool. Austin, 11 knockouts and 1 submission of his 13 career wins, so 12 of 13. That's pretty damn good. All of his losses have came by knockout. He was knocked out by Greg Hardy, knocked out by Justin Taffa, and knocked out by Renata Dinas. But in October, he picked up a decision win over Rubens Despange to salvage his UFC career. Look, Austin, he's getting up there in age. He's, you know, his chin is taking some hits. We'll see how he does in this one as he takes on the young, hungry up-and-comer Mario Pinto. 26 years old from Portugal, but now lives and trains in England. Of his 9 wins, 5 knockouts and 1 submission, and he picked up a under 2-minute knockout of Lucas Camacho on Damas Contreras Series in October, which was his last win. The safe bet to be this year would to not pick undefeated fighters, but there's just something about a 9-0 guy taking on Austin Lane. I think Austin might lean more on the grappling, but I think Mario's going to bring the thunder, bring the knockouts, and get a victory here. Give me Mario Pinto over Austin Lane. I'm not picking against the -360 favorite. No, no, no. Heavyweight needs a stud. Heavyweight needs a stud. If Mario Pinto can put it together, string together a great performance here, he can get a ranked opponent. That's how easy it is to get a ranked opponent. I mean, let me just read you some of the bottom-level heavyweights. Talashon Teixeira, his biggest win is Justin Taffa. Kedi Enchukwu, I don't know, Chris Barnett. Mick Parkin, he's getting an opportunity against Marcin Tybura. Waldo Cortez Acosta, probably Rebels Desmonge, I don't even know. We got Shamil Gaziev, Tai Tuivasa. It is not hard to break into this division, let me tell you that. So we're going to go with Mario Pinto, but if he loses, I don't think I can pick an undefeated fighter the rest of the year. Truly, I'll pick against Shavkat. I'll pick against anyone you name it. Undefeated fighters might be cursed. I think Mario is going to be the opposite of that curse. Keeping our main card a rolling now, we have Danny Barlow taking on Sam Patterson. Danny left hands to God. What a nickname there. Sam, no nickname, Patterson. Danny, 9-0. Sam, 12-2-1. 6'3 to 6'2. We got some tall boys here. Sam has 1 inch in height. Danny has 1 inch in reach, 79-78. Of course, if you didn't know from the nickname, Danny fights at southpaw. Sam fights in the orthodox fighting position. Danny, -300. Sam, +240. Danny's coming in as the heavy favorite. From Tennessee, the 29-year-old Danny has 5 knockouts and 1 submission of his 9 wins. Why is that the exact same stat line as Mario Pinto? 9-0, 5 knockouts, 1 sub. Must be some of those numbers. Danny had a great debut, you know. Finished Josh Quinlan after getting a minute and 19-second knockout in Damian's Quintero series. His second fight of 2024 was a close decision to Nikola Veritikhanov. And after I just saw Austin Vanderford run through him, I don't know how confident I feel in the grappling department, because Danny Barlow hasn't really faced any grappling. He's pretty much faced strikers, and I think it'll be a test here when he takes on Sam Patterson, who very much wants to get fights on the ground. 28 years old from England, 4 knockouts and 7 subs make up his 11 of 12 victories. 2 of his 2 losses have came by knockout, one of which was to Yanal Ashmov in 2023. But since then, 2 round 1 submissions, 1 over Johan Lennes in January and 1 over Kiefer Crosby in July, both of last year. Sam, I love your effort, but I think Danny's coming in with the knockout power. I think this is going to be the one exceptional card where you see undefeated fighters winning, but if Danny and freaking Mario Pinto lives, then I'm actually done picking. There's just no way I can do it anymore. So, Danny Barlow, round 1 knockout of Sam Patterson. That's my prediction. I think Sam is going to get in a little funk where all of his fights end in round 1. That's what he's striking me as. Main card keeps a rolling as we're back in the featherweight division as Hyder the Hurricane Emil takes on William Jaguar Gomez. Yes, this is going to be a banger fight. A little surprise, William isn't fighting upwards in the rankings, but I'll make the rules. Hyder, plus 165 underdog. William, the minus 200 favorite. Hyder, 10-0, 14-2 for Gomez. 6'5'9", Gomez has 3 inches in height. He also has 3 inches in reach, 73-70. Switch stance for Hyder Emil, southpaw for William Gomez. Hyder Emil, the undefeated fighter, is 34 years old from California. 7 finishes of his 10 wins, 6 by knockout and 1 by sub. He's gone 2-0 in his UFC debut so far. Both of them knockouts. None bigger than Jiang Li in July last year. That was shocking. 1 minute and 5 seconds. And you ever seen Rod Tang fight? If anyone knows who Rod Tang is, he is a Muay Thai legend. Notoriously has a impossible to knock out. And that's what the Jiang Li fight was. Hyder Emil literally looking like a punching bag on Jiang Li's face. And Jiang Li just wouldn't get knocked out. He wouldn't go down. The ref was eventually like, okay, Jiang, I'm going to stop this fight because you're definitely going to get a concussion. So Hyder coming in with some momentum. I won't lie, a 34-year-old up-and-coming featherweight isn't the most attractive thing, but he's coming off some knockouts. Like I said, undefeated as well. He's got momentum, but this is where the undefeated curse will strike again, as the 27-year-old from Paris, who is 14-2 on a 12-fight winning streak with 8 finishes, 7 knockouts, 1 sub, William Gomez will handle business in this one. 4-0 in the UFC, wins over Jarno Ahrens, Francis Marshall, Yoska Mori, and Joe Henderson Brito. Now, I don't think he beat Joe Henderson Brito. I thought Brito won that, but mind you, we were in Paris. It was close. They're going to give it to Gomez. And what I think is going to happen here is you're going to see Gomez break down Hyder Emil. Hyder Emil is going to go into later stages of round 2, early stages of round 3, and William Gomez is going to pick him apart. I think this is where an undefeated fighter loses his O, and I'm going to go with William 27 Gomez. It's not his nickname, but if I had to give him one, how about that? Actually, I think it's Jaguar. William Jaguar Gomez, which is actually a pretty dope name. So, William, good for you. You're my prediction. And we'll go, it's hard to picture him getting a finish, but we can always go round 3 knockout. Who knows? We'll see. After that, lightweight division, as we get a banger here. It's a shame that this fight is not in front of a crowd, because it would be electric. Nasrat Haqparast takes on El Gringo Esteban Ribavix. The plus 230, Nasrat takes on the minus 285, Esteban. Nasrat 17-5, Esteban 14-1. Both men are 5'10", 3 inches in reach for Nasrat, 72-69. Southpaw with the left for Nasrat, orthodox for Esteban Ribavix. We'll start with the lightweight Nasrat, 29 years old from Afghanistan, but now actually lives and trains in Germany. 4-fight win streak for the kid, as he has 10 knockouts of his 17 wins. He's only ever been submitted and knocked out once each of his 5 losses. You know, Nasrat at one point was kind of in an interesting situation. You know, he was 5-4, didn't have much momentum, was able to pick up wins over John McDessie and Landon Quiñones, and then finally got a finish of Jamie Mullarkey. Most recently in June, took Jared Gordon to a close decision in Saudi Arabia, picking up the victory. Nasrat back in action. Listen to his losses. Drew Dober, Dan Hooker, King Green. Not too bad of losses, if you ask me. Especially the Dan Hooker fight. Dan Hooker went full grappler on him. Dan Hooker wanted no part of the striking of Nasrat Haqparast. Let me tell you, dude. Nasrat, he's game. He truly is game when he's fighting. But he's taking on an absolute killer. an absolute savage. The 14-1, the favorite, the 28-year-old from Argentina, 14 wins, 12 finishes, 7 knockouts, 5 subs. I mean, what more do you want? Esteban Ribovic. Dude, Esteban Ribovic is such a dog. Such a dog. And I mean, he didn't really break out. You know, he won in 90 seconds on the MSK Challenger Series, then dropped his debut to Loic Radziboev, getting taken down 11 times. Then picked up a decision over Kamala Kirk, and it was like, okay, whatever. Then, last year, Esteban Ribovic's breakout year, a 37-second head kick knockout cold of Terrence McKinney. That'll end up giving you some recognition. Then fought at the Sphere against Daniel Zaluber and gave us the fight of the year. Gave us the freaking fight of the year, one of the craziest fights I've ever seen. Esteban versus Daniel Zaluber is one that deserves to go into the Hall of Fame. Give me Esteban Ribovic all day. Now, Nasrat isn't easy to finish, so I'm seeing maybe a gritty three-round decision, but I'm not picking against Esteban Ribovic for a long time. Even if he loses, you know I ride with my Argentinian boy. Give me Esteban Ribovic by decision. Love this fight. Then the co-main event. Guys, I have no idea why this is the co-main event. What bout order could even lead us here? But in the co-main event, we have Julian Marquez and Cody Brundage. Wow, it's like how are either of these guys even still in the UFC? Plus 120 for Cody, minus 140 for Julian Marquez. The Cuban Missile Crisis is his nickname. That's right, an entire actual crisis is his nickname. I have no words, no words. Cody, 10-6 with one no contest. Julian, 9-5. 6'2 to 6 foot. Julian is taller. Same reach of 72. Same stance of orthodox. I have no idea what to expect here. Cody is 30 years old from Colorado. 8 finishes and 10 wins. 5 knockouts, 3 subs. Of his 6 losses, he's been finished 4 times. He was actually supposed to fight Ryan Loader on here, and Ryan Loader won the Ultimate Fighter, so maybe that's why this was the co-main event. But nonetheless, I'd have shopped the bout order around. I mean, let me tell you, William Gomez should have been here. Esteban Ribovic should have been here. Jeppe Mariscal would have been better off being here. There's a lot of other fights. Charles Johnson, Ramazan Temeriev should have been the co-main event, for goodness sakes. We got ranked flyweight action the second fight of the card. The disrespect. But Cody Brundage, been with the UFC since 2020. I mean, he has just been hit or miss. Hit or miss, and I guess they never miss you. By the way, lost on Davis Quintero series. Got knocked out in round one. Somehow winds up in the UFC. He's gone 4-4. 4-4. Now, mind you, I do want to say with some of these losses, Nick Maximoff got out-grappled, got a submission of Dulce Luchambula, then a knockout of Trayson Gore, then takes on Michael Kajacek, gets knocked out, takes on Rodolfo Vieira, gets submitted, takes on Cedric Dumas. That was a bad loss for him. That was a bad loss. Beats Jacob Malcoon by disqualification, slam finishes Zachary Reese, then has to take on Bo Nickel at UFC 300. Finally fought in June, had no contest against Abdulrazak Al-Hassan after what I think is an eye poke. I don't know what's going on. But Cody Brundage is back in action. Love him or hate him or don't even care about him. He's fighting. So that we got to talk about him. Julian Marquez, his opponent, 34 years old from Nevada. 9 finishes in 9 wins. 5 knockouts, 4 subs. Of his 5 losses, he's been knocked out 3 times. Mind you, all of those losses have came. Knockout losses have came in his last 3 fights. So he debuts coming off of Davis Quintero series, actually fought on the 4th ever episode of Davis Quintero series, gets a nasty knockout off the loss. Debuts, submits Darren Stewart. He's looking good. Drops a kind of average split decision to Alicia De Cherco. Follows it up. Crazy comeback against Makita Polo with a performance of Night Andacancho. Then submits Sam Alvey in 2021. Then Gregory Rodriguez destroys this boy in round 1. Then Marc-Andre Barut destroys him in round 2. And most recently, Zachary Reese starched him in 20 seconds in 2024 in June. That was an insane knockout by day. That was insane. June 8th, 2024. I still remember the date. I was at a Twin Peaks with my cousin and my boy Jaden watching it. Crazy, crazy work. So, I don't know. Julian Marquez may come back looking better than ever, but he's taking this on short notice. He's facing Cody Brundage. I've learned, what should I say? What should I say about this? There's 3 things you can count on. Taxes, death, and Cody Brundage winning a fight by disqualification. So I don't even know. Cody Brundage, I don't know if it's going to be a no contest. I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm picking him. I could care less if he wins, but it's a sloppy main event, so give us a sloppy good fight. With that, we get to the main event. The best fight of the evening, hands down. I think Charles Johnson versus Ramazan Temeriyov is going to be fire as well. But when you get the number 6 and the number 8 flyweights in the world, action-packed is guaranteed. And we're yet to really have a boring main event at flyweight. I mean, I won't lie, Brandon Moreno versus Amir Albazi wasn't the most entertaining thing, but I'm thinking of Brandon Royval versus Tatsuro Taira. That was a banger. All the Brandon Moreno Pantoa fights, all the Figueiredo fights, them usually entertaining. Let's get into this one, though. Manel Starboy Cape takes on Asul Zulfikar Almabayev. Manel Cape, 20-7. Atuoma Bay of 21-2. 5'5-5'4 gives Manel 1 inch in height, and he has 3 inches in reach. 68-65. Southpaw with the left for Manel. Orthodox with the right for Asu Almabayev. Manel minus 220 is the favorite. Plus 180. Asu is the underdog. Manel Cape, 31 years old from Angola, but now lives and trains in Las Vegas. Of his 20 wins, how about 12 knockouts and 5 submissions? Of his 7 losses, he's been submitted twice. He was actually supposed to fight the number one ranked contender, or just ranked in general, for the men's 5 division, Brandon Royval. Brandon Royval had to pull out. In will step Asu Almabayev, who was actually supposed to fight Steve Ursig. Then Steve Ursig was pulled to fight Brandon Moreno, who was slated to fight Alan Nascimento. Then with Royval pulling out, they're like, Asu, how about you take on Manel Cape? So these two have just been window shopping opponents. It's been crazy. Manel, been with the UFC since 2021. Imagine debuting and you have to take on Alexander Pantoa, and he does nothing the whole fight. Similar scenario against Matthias Nicolo. Doesn't do anything. Finally, starts to find his groove. 4-fight winning streak, fight of the nights, multiple knockouts, insane. Then, last July, ran into an issue with Mamad Mokaev. Just a bad injury, just foul-ridden fight against Mohamed Makhachev. It was awful. It was actually so bad, Mohamed Makhachev was not brought back, and Manel Cape was actually given a huge opportunity against Bruno Silva. Now, in December, Manel Cape destroyed Bruno Silva. I mean, holy cow, what a knockout. He was toying with him. He was hitting like little Muhammad Ali shuffles, hitting a little like Conor McGregor taunts in the octagon. Manel Cape was on fire. Interestingly enough, Asu Almabayev said this week that the last person he thought he fought was Mohamed Mokaev. He didn't even know about his last performance. So, Manel, the one issue we've seen him struggle with has been the grappling against Mohamed Mokaev, Matthias Nicolau, and a little bit against Alexander Pantoa. But I don't think it's going to hurt him here when he takes on Asu Almabayev. Asu, 31 years old from Kazakhstan, 17-fight winning streak. Are you kidding me? Incredible. 12 finishes and 21 wins, 3 knockouts and 9 subs. His 1-of-2 losses came by submission. Asu, 4-0 in the UFC. He holds 1 rear naked chokehold of Ode Osborne. Other than that, grappling decisions against CJ Vergara, Jose Johnson, and Matthias Nicolau, who he actually dropped. So this one should be interesting. Clashing of styles, huge opportunity for both of these guys. Manel Cape finally getting the main event. And in my opinion, I think if Manel wins, you give him the next title shot. I mean, the flyweight title picture is really awkward right now. You got Pantoa taking on Kai Kara France. You've got Brandon Moreno taking on Steve Ursig. Royval's hurt. Amiral Bazzi doesn't have an opponent. Tatsuro Taira doesn't have an opponent. We don't even know what to do with Alex Perez. And here we got Asu and Manel Cape having to pick up the pieces. So I'm going to go with Manel Cape. I think Manel Cape is going to show a bit of, despite being both 31, it just feels like Manel is older for some reason. I don't know. Asu kind of has a younger face, despite being from the tough mountains of Kazakhstan. But I think Manel is going to piece him apart. I even think Manel gets taken down in round one, starts to pick it up at the end of round one, in round two, and you see another round three TKO for Manel Cape. And honestly, if this goes in round four, I'm picking Manel Cape to get it done. But this should be action-packed. This should be a good main event. Don't know if I'm going to be watching it with the Elimination Chamber going on. Might have to run a little dual TV setup. We'll have to see, but this should be a decent Vegas Apex event. But I did see that a UFC executive said that the UFC was looking to get away from Apex events, and any Apex events in the second half of the year will be targeted more as international events. I mean, if you didn't hear, they're actually going to Qatar at the end of May, which is going to be crazy. So the UFC is branching out into the world. I love to see it. We'll see how my predictions do for this card. Hey, I'm 51-24 on the year. Can't complain. But ladies and gentlemen, that's all I got for today's episode. Jam-packed. We haven't gone this long in a while, over an hour, hour and 20 minutes. I love to see it. I got to leave in an hour. And in an hour and 30 minutes, I got to coach a hockey team. I got to cook up a pregame speech. I got to get the boys buzzing. It is do or die. We're in the semifinals. Wish me luck, viewers. I love you all so, so very much. Let me know your thoughts on UFC Vegas, the NBA, the NHL, and Elimination Chamber. Thank you guys so much. Make it the best weekend of your lives. Have the best life of your lives, whatever that means. As always, I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.